In these the talks we're offering in the afternoon, we're kind of emphasizing or exploring aspects of the Satipatthana Sutta, of the text that describes establishing mindfulness. We're exploring aspects of that sutta that offer more general instructions on establishing mindfulness, rather than the specific exercises that are offered throughout the sutta. As Gil said, there's some 13 or so specific exercises that point to various aspects of the body, of feeling tone, of mind states, and of processes in our mind. But we're kind of focusing on the teachings in that sutta that really talk about what it is to establish mindfulness, what the maybe we could say the qualities of mind that support establishing mindfulness. So essentially, in these talks, we're focusing more on the how of establishing mindfulness rather than the what. Rather than what we pay attention to, we're looking more at how mindfulness is established and the qualities, the way of attending to experience that supports that. In the mornings, we're talking a little bit more about the what. In the afternoons here, we're really exploring the how. What is it? What is this wise mindfulness? What is this kind of attention that frees the mind? On the opening night of the retreat, I believe I mentioned this definition phrase. The very early part of the sutta, what it is to establish mindfulness is described in this simple phrase: one abides observing. The body as a body, feelings as feelings, mind states as mind states, phenomena as phenomena, or processes as processes. One abides observing the body as a body, ardent, mindful, clearly comprehending, free from desires and discontent for the world. This afternoon, like to explore this definition with you, the different words that are in here, what they might mean, how they might inform how we practice. The first word that kind of catches my heart, I like this word, abides. It may not be really emphasized in the definition, I don't know, but the word that's translated as abide here is a word that is essentially related to home, dwelling, place to live. The word is viharati, which is related to vihara, and the monastics live in viharas. It's the name, that's their home. So it is a place to live. This, to me, brings in already some notion of the quality, the direction for our mindfulness practice, to dwell at home in our experience. This word abides has these kind of resonances: dwelling, living, resting, home, content, maybe a sense of intimacy or connection, of care. How we feel when we are at home. Most of us, I think, when we first start paying attention to our experience, some of us may have a little bit of a flavor of, oh, wow, I do feel at home. But there's a lot of what goes on in there that doesn't feel so home-like, feels more combative or a struggle. And yet, what might it mean to allow those to belong too? This opens us to everything in our experience. Everything belongs. This quality or this word abides, to me, points to a kind of a relaxed, receptive quality in establishing mindfulness. Relaxation is so foundational, supportive for our practice. We've talked about this a little bit. I explored it the first morning instructions, really exploring relaxing the body, which supports the mind to relax. And the relaxed mind supporting a very natural opening to what's here. As the mind relaxes, it's not pulled into thoughts of past or future. It's available to be here, to know what's here. This quality of a relaxed awareness is an interesting kind of, or to me, speaks again to a kind of an interesting balance between, or a balance around effort, let's say. Not pushing, not striving, and yet not asleep either. Where we really feel like we can dwell here, alert and relaxed. This notion of alertness and relaxation to me comes in a couple of times in this definition. So one abides. Even that word to me has a resonance. We just sit with it. What does it mean to abide with your experience? Even that word can evoke a sense of resting with, being with, opening to, allowing. This one word has a lot of overtones to it. The next part of the phrase, one abides observing, the body as a body. And today I'll just stick with body as a body. It's repeated, as I said, for each of the four areas of experience. So one abides observing the body as a body. Observing, Gil pointed to this, the use of the word through seeing, looking at. There's a lot of imagery in the Buddhist teachings that use this. Even the word vipassana has this connotation of seeing aspects of our experience, clear seeing. And so we see, we recognize, we know our experience, this word observing, closely observe, to look at carefully. These are connotations that are connected with the word. I think there can be some other words that can also support what's pointed to here, what feels like through experience is pointed to. I've seen in my own practice this kind of sense of observing, and using that language of observing, which works for us who are sighted people, can see, that often with the sense of observing, there's a separation between observer and observed. There's a clear sense of something observed and observing. And observing can have a sense of detached, not involved with that kind of aspect, which is useful in this practice, to have that sense of non-entanglement with. Observing gives that flavor of non-entanglement. Knowing experience as experience, the body as a body. And yet I've seen sometimes in my own practice that this idea of observing can come with this idea of, when I'm mindful properly, it means that I feel a sense of separation. And sometimes mindfulness has that quality of really clearly knowing the difference, knowing, yes, there's something being observed, and there is this observing that's not affected by what is being observed. But sometimes the experience of being mindful has more the flavor of being with experience, a sense of being right up with it, connected. And so for me, that flavor of that intimacy, that intimate meeting of experience, of awareness and experience, sometimes it doesn't have the flavor of separation. It sometimes feels like the mindfulness is right inside, imbuing, infusing the experience. And I got a little confused early on, like, you know, that must not be mindfulness. I told one of my teachers about this experience, Sayadaw Utejaniya. He had asked me to look at times, or what it was like in my experience when the mind was not stuck, when it felt like it was free from reactivity. And I noticed two distinct qualities, two distinct kinds of experiences that I went and reported to him. I went off and explored this for 5 days, and in my next interview I went back and said, I'm seeing different things here. Sometimes it feels like when there isn't any stickiness, when there isn't that sense of entanglement, sometimes it feels like there's a separation between what's being observed and the observing. And sometimes it feels like the mindfulness is just right inside the experience. It's not entangled with it, but it's not separate from it either. And he said that this was kind of two different, we could say, perspectives about that kind of mindfulness that is not entangled. He said at one, in the case where it feels like there's a separation, the mind in that place is very aware that there's a difference between what is observed and that and the observing process. The observing process is independent of what is observed. What is observed comes and goes. And there is this observing process. So they're separate processes at work, essentially. So he said the mind is clearly recognizing that they're different processes. And he said when it feels like the mindfulness is right next to the experience or inside the experience, he said that's when the mind is very aware that those two processes are happening simultaneously and are very intimately connected. They inform each other. So the mind aware of one side of it feels like a separation. Aware of the other having the other perspective on it feels very intimate, right inside the experience. And so I say this because, you know, the idea of using the seeing metaphor sometimes can add some limitations to what we think of as mindfulness. It's been very helpful for me to understand that more, infused quality that can happen at times. And it's not like one is better than the other. At some point, I was trying to make one of them happen, and he's like, don't try to do that. Just notice when they're, notice what they are. Notice when they're happening. So observing, or being with, we could say, that language of being with might be evocative of more that intimate, connected mindfulness. Observing the body as a body. Being with the body as a body. This phrase, different ways people translate it, it seems a little odd to just repeat the body as a body, but in English, it evokes something for me. We observe the body as a body. Not as I or me or mine, but as a body. Other ways it's translated, we observe the body in and of itself. I think another translation says, in regard to the body, one observes the body. That one doesn't have as much resonance for my mind. So a body is what we explore. We could say, here's one way of looking at this phrase. We observe or we be with the body as a body. So the body is what we explore. As a body is how we explore it. We observe feelings as feelings. Feelings are what we observe. As feelings is how we observe them. It kind of brings in this, it brings in an aspect of wisdom, this definition. It's not just speaking about being aware in the present moment. It's how it's useful to be aware in the present moment. Notice your experience as experience in the present moment, not as me or mine. A body as a body. It points to the impersonal nature of the body as a human experience. There are we can look around and see there are bodies in the room, bodies on the screen, or partial bodies on the screen. This begins to encourage us to notice what is it? What is it to notice the body in and of itself? That phrase then begins to resonate. Notice the body in and of itself. Not our ideas about the body. Not our views or concepts about the body. But just what is this experience of body? Touching into it, the feeling, the sensation level, some of the words Gil explored yesterday, sensing, feeling, recognizing the experience. The sensation level of experience in the body has certain qualities to it. It's not a hand. Let your attention rest in your hand for a moment. I talk about the hand, and it's useful to have the concept of hand, because then we can all kind of know the same thing. But what is the hand? Hand is not experience. Hand is an idea. What's a sensation in the hand? Right now, for me, vibration, pulsing, coolness, a little bit of feeling of moisture, tingling, stiffness. That's sensation in the hand. That's the direct experience of hand. I mean, I'm using words to describe it, but the sensations aren't words there. That's more the kind of the experience there. So observing the body as a body, observing the experience of a human body. What is that? Letting go of the concept or idea of body. It's hard to do. But if you just touch in this moment to the sensation in the hand. Sometimes it can just feel like it's just like when I'm not looking at it. It's just like sensation floating in space. So this phrase, observing the body as a body, feelings as feelings, also encourages a kind of a impartial observing of experience, non-judgmental, non-interfering, just the experience. So I'm going to keep repeating this phrase. As I repeat the phrase each time I say it, you know, just maybe let yourself go into the body. One abides observing the body as a body. One abides being with the body as a body. One abides being with the body in and of itself. Maybe just allowing this receptive quality to receive the experience of the body. I think abides also points to that receptivity. Abide, rest, dwell with the body as a body. This kind of mixture of abides observing these two words together. They kind of join to, you know, the notion of the observing side, the looking at side, and the dwelling, receiving side. Point to two sides of what can be pointed to here in this sutta. The interpretation of the Satipatthana Sutta, all these instructions to notice various aspects of experience, can be understood as a directing of the attention, of choosing particular aspects of experience to observe, to see. Instruction on notice the breathing in, notice the breathing out. When breathing in, one knows one's breathing in. That language, though, can be understood in different ways. And this language throughout the sutta around the exercises about paying attention to experience can be understood either as, or at times as, choose to look at this aspect of experience for a time. Spend some time with the breath. Notice what it's like to breathe in. Notice what it's like breathing in long, what it's like breathing out long, breathing in short, breathing out short. Breathing in, knowing that you're breathing in, breathing out, knowing that you're breathing out. So there can be this value in choosing areas of experience, choosing to attend to the breath, to the postures, to the elemental aspect of experience. I was pointing to the vibration, tingling, pulsing, heat, coolness earlier. That's described in a section of the sutta that talks about looking at the elemental nature of experience connected with, in the sutta, earth, air, fire, and water. Air being the vibration, pulsing, tingling qualities. Earth being the heaviness, the density, the weight. Fire being the temperature, heat, coolness. So there are times when we direct our attention to various aspects of experience. And it's useful, and that can be a way that the mind heads towards this establishment of mindfulness. But the language of the sutta also supports an understanding of when something is happening, here's how to be with it. So, when breathing in, one knows one's breathing in. When breathing in is happening, one can know breathing in is happening. Some of the other language in the suttas, when feeling a pleasant feeling, one understands, I feel a pleasant feeling. Or in the section on mind states, one understands a mind affected by greed as a mind affected by greed. One understands a mind unaffected by greed as a mind unaffected by greed. So it can be understood that as you're opening to experience, what is obvious in experience, what's being received in experience, this is how to be with it. Know it as experience. So both a kind of directing of the attention is possibly pointed to as a way to establish mindfulness. Also, not directing the attention, but more allowing the receptivity, not choosing or aiming the attention, let's say, not saying, I'm going to pay attention to this, and if the attention gets pulled from that, I'm going to bring the attention back. That's more the directed style of attention, where we pick an experience and aim to stay with it, perhaps. The more receptive style of practice doesn't choose a particular aspect of experience, but just simply settles back and notices what's here, what's obvious. And so settling back, what's obvious in this moment, the pressure of my hips against the chair, oh, that's body is a body. The breath, obvious now. The breath is a breath. Breathing in, knowing breathing in. Hearing, knowing that hearing is happening. A feeling of happiness arising. Aware of that. With this simple recognition, oh, this is what's here. We could, with respect to qualities in the mind, happiness being a quality in the mind, we could replace in this text, one understands a mind affected by happiness as a mind affected by happiness. That's it. Just a simple awareness, understanding what's here. And then there's also, so it's, I think it's interesting to recognize that this, really, I think it's this quality of attention can be directed. We can choose to attend to something, or we can let the attention, what is attended to, attention will be happening on its own if we're not actively choosing what to pay attention to. It's kind of like the breath in that way, you know. It can either be something that we direct. We can sit here and say, I'm going to breathe in now. And breathe in. We can hold our breath. Okay, I'm going to breathe out now. We can do that for some amount of time. We can't do it forever, to hold our breath forever. If we do, we'll pass out and then we'll start to breathe naturally. But we can choose to control our breathing. We can choose to direct the breathing. But we don't have to. If we don't choose to direct the breathing will happen. Attention is kind of similar to that. We can choose to direct the attention. I can ask you to attend to your hands, attend to your feet. Notice the sensations under your mask or in your breathing. If you don't have a mask online, just notice the sensations in your nostrils and mouth, probably it's pretty easy. The attention gets directed there very naturally through my saying that, but it is the kind of a choosing or directing of the attention. And then you can let go of that and just kind of say, okay. And this is a learning for some of us. For me, it was kind of hard to learn at times how to just settle back and not be in charge of what the attention was on in the meditation. It actually happens all the time. Whenever our mind wanders, it's like the mind is wandering. We're not in charge of that wandering. It's attending to something that we're not choosing. Well, this is attention at work. And I think that's maybe why we're a little less familiar with being present with that non-directed attention. Because often when the attention is just doing its thing, it means our mind is wandering. But it doesn't have to mean that we're not mindful. So we can settle back, relax. And what's here in this moment? What's obvious for you? Just let it come to you. Let it come to you. Maybe it's the sound of my voice or the sounds outside, wherever you are, in your home or here. Maybe it's a sensation in your body or a breath. Just relax. Something is being known in this moment. It is possible to be mindful of that. I used to think if I wasn't directing the attention, if I wasn't choosing what to be aware of, it meant I wasn't being mindful. But the mindfulness can follow the attention. So we can rest, relax, and receive. What's the attention with now? How about now? How about now? So this is much more of a receptive or open awareness than what I'm describing in this moment. And I described this directed attention, choosing something to pay attention to. These two can come together. They don't have to be thought of as one or the other. So we can, for instance, choose a particular field of experience, like the breath, maybe. We can kind of tune the attention to that area. Oh, here's the breath. And then receive, open to, how is that breath showing up? It's like what Gil said, you know, how is the breath? Let the breath show you how it is experienced. That's this blending. There's a kind of a carving out an area of experience we're attending to, just kind of simplifying. Maybe we could think of it as simplifying to just this part, the breath, and then receiving that aspect of experience. So not having to dive in and be really, like, figure out all the sensations, but, oh, here's an in-breath. What's that in-breath like? Let it show you. Just receive the sensations of the in-breath. So this blending of receptive and directed can be very powerful. Abide observing. Receive what you choose to attend to. The next word is ardent. That's the translation Bhikkhu Bodhi offers for this word, atapi. It has a connotation of engagement, alertness. And the word ardent has a quality of some heart connection, so heartfelt connection to experience. Again, remembering these are supports or ways that being mindful will support moving in the direction of freedom. So not a just kind of careless, yeah, I know what's happening, that, you know, kind of checklist approach Gil was talking about, but really caring, connected to experience. Interest, connection. To me, this is where the word interest comes in, the exploring the... When we're interested in something, there's a kind of a natural connection with it. It also speaks to a kind of persistence or balanced and sustained effort. If there's a kind of ardency or a kind of caring, connected repairing connection to experience, there's more of an inclination to really stay with it. Times it can even feel like, you know, love. I mentioned friendliness the other night, you know, friendly, caring attention. These words are also resonant with this part of the phrase. Caring for ourselves by being with ourselves. So it encourages a continuity, the stabilizing of the mindfulness. The stabilizing of the mindfulness, really where the power of learning, understanding happens. And so we have this kind of interesting contrast of two words here, ardent and dwell. So this is pointing to kind of, again, it's relaxed and engaged. Dwelling, in the abiding side, dwell, receive, rest, relax. Engaged, diligent, caring, alert. We might think of relaxation and alertness as different things, but they can come together. What might it mean in this moment? What might it mean to be relaxed and alert? Sometimes the posture can reflect that. We can have a kind of an uprightness of posture and relax around that. Actually, our physical structure, our spine, our skeleton is designed to balance without a lot of stress or tension in the muscles. And so if there's balance in the bones, there can be relaxation around them. So sometimes our posture can support that alert, upright, balanced, and relaxed around. That might be a way to feel into this quality of relaxed and alert. I think we know this quality. At times when we've been at ease and happy and interested in our lives, that flavor of at ease and really engaged, that's what's pointed to as the container that we're encouraged to develop mindfulness with. Relaxed and alert. So some of the other words in this phrase, clearly comprehending, mindful. Gil talked about, we've been talking about mindfulness a lot, and Gil spoke about clear comprehension yesterday. So I see that I'm getting close to time, so I'm going to skip those and go to the final phrase in this. One abides observing. The body is a body. Ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful, free from desire and discontent for the world. So this speaks, it speaks to, again, I think this definition speaks to two, the process by which we establish mindfulness and what it's like when mindfulness is established. Just this, the way this is phrased here, abides observing, the body is a body, ardent, clearly comprehending and mindful, free from desires and discontent for the world. It sounds like we're already free from them. That would be the result of the practice. This whole phrase, in a way, can be understood as what happens as we engage with these practices, the exercises that are mentioned. Breathing in, one knows one's breathing in. Breathing out, one knows one's breathing out. This is what allows this kind of mindfulness to be established. And I also feel like these words that we're exploring tonight can point to ways that we can engage with those practices. Relaxed, engaged, interested. Caring. So inclining towards or bringing some of those qualities into how we are practicing. And this phrase, free from desires and discontent for the world, one Pali scholar, meditation teacher, monastic, Bhikkhu Anālayo, points that the way the Pali is in this particular phrase, it can be understood also as a kind of ongoing process. So the English would be translated more as freeing from desires and discontent for the world. So something that happens as we do the practice. So we do have to understand and recognize that we're not going to be there with free from desires, that we can't just flip the switch and say, okay, I'm going to be free from desires and discontent. It's time to sit down and practice mindfulness. That's not going to happen, probably. So we have to learn to work with it. What does it mean to explore that side of the experience? So this begins to point to the we're moving in the direction, let's say, we're moving in the direction of allowing experience to be as it is. So free from desires and discontent for the world. The world, that phrase, can be understood in different ways too. It might be understood very literally as, yeah, set aside worldly concerns right now. Set aside all the content of all of those thoughts and just attend to this experience in the present moment. So set aside greed and distress for what's happening in the world right now. It can be understood in that way. And it can also, the world, the phrase the world, at one point the Buddha said, what I call the world is this fathom long body. So that's another way of exploring what this phrase means. Free from desires and discontent in the world of our experience. Free from desires and discontent around what's happening in the present moment while it's happening. So setting, we might be able to set aside that argument that we had with somebody the other day, but attending to a pain in our knee, be really frustrated. And so that right there is like the edge or the work of our practice. What might it mean to allow that pain? What without reactivity? What might it mean to recognize, oh, there's frustration connected with that pain and have that be known just as, yeah, that's what's happening. So we're probably not going to be completely free of desires and discontent for our experience. This is a lot of what happens for us. We attend to body sensations. We attend to mind states. We notice a breath. It's a little rough. It feels unpleasant. We feel like we're doing something wrong. That's discontent for the experience in the present moment. And so freeing oneself from desires and discontent doesn't mean to say, and we can't usually do this, you know, to say, well, stop being frustrated by this thing or stop feeling like it's a problem. But the practice begins to point us to kind of opening to or expanding the container, we might say, expanding the what we're attending to include that discontent. So freeing oneself from desires and discontent, the first step is really acknowledging, recognizing, using all of these same skills that we've been talking about. Receive, observe the discontent. Receive, observe that desire for things to be other than they are. So we explore, you know, the movement in the direction of allowing what's happening to happen in the present moment, to have that sense of free from desires and discontent, is to notice when there are desires and discontent. That's when the process, that's how the process of freeing from starts to happen. There is a huge difference, vast difference between just being caught in the discontent or the desire, feeling like it's a problem. Like when we're caught by discontent, we think there's something wrong, we have to fix it or change it. Big difference between that and, oh, there's discontent happening right now. The feeling of those two is also very different. The experience of being caught in the discontent, churning, trying to figure out how to fix it, all of that, we feel the stress, we feel the suffering, we feel the kind of tied into knots around it. When we notice it, oh, this is discontent, the mind is frustrated right now. It's like we've stepped into a bigger field. It's like, oh, that's what's happening. There's this unpleasant sensation and there's frustration that's happening. That's the beginning right there of the freeing from desires and discontent. Right in that moment, you're free from the caughtness in that. You're free from being caught by that discontent. That's a huge difference. The feeling of those two is also very different. The palpable sense of ease that can come. Sometimes a feeling of freedom. Oh, this is just discontent. That's all that's happening. It's not a big deal. That's just what's happening. We feel the difference. And we begin to taste that quality of being free from that discontent. Even if it's not gone, we're free from being caught in it. And over time, it begins to, those habits of desire, discontent, getting caught in our experience in that way, begin to weaken because of this seeing, this understanding. So many times, I've heard so many people come and describe, wow, when I finally noticed there was just frustration, yeah, it just kind of faded away. We finally have the courage to look at these things directly and the capacity, because it sometimes we don't have the capacity. Sometimes our mind doesn't have the there's other things going on, you know, other situations happening. We've had an argument with somebody, or we're really hungry, or we didn't get sleep the night before. There's all kinds of reasons why the mindfulness might not be quite as strong at a given point. And so sometimes we stay caught. But when we can see that, when we see the, oh, this is what's happening, we can feel the release at times. We can feel it begin to just like fade away. And that that kind of experience when we see just that simple awareness of something, creating the conditions for a release of it, that gives so much confidence in the value of this mindfulness, this way of practicing, this orientation. Abide. Observing the body as a body. A body in and of itself. Ardent. Caring, interested, connected. Clearly comprehending. Mindful. Setting aside, freeing oneself of desires and discontent.